Well, thank you very much for the invitation to be with you this morning, and please bear with me with my croaky throat. I'll do the best I can, and I trust you can clearly hear what I'm saying. Great. I bring greetings from what is known as ELM, E-L-M, E-L-M, Equipping Leadership for Mission, which is the new constellation, part of the new constellation in the Synod's restructure. So my greetings from colleagues and friends at ELM to you all. I'm going to ask if the image could be displayed now. Thank you. That's great. I want to begin with the perspective this morning of a person who has been labelled by disability. And with reference particularly to this image of five men who are wandering in the wilderness. The depiction is from a journal of disability and religion, and the writer in that journal is a person by the name of Ellen Kellenberger. So that's, I'll come back and refer to that. I'm going to paint a picture this morning of the ministry that I'm involved with in a general sense. My title, as mentioned, was Disability Inclusion Advocate. So it takes in quite a spectrum of people who are marginalised by disability. So personal accounts, beginning with the lived experience of individuals, personal accounts by people with intellectual disability have rarely been recorded. When they are, such treasures provide us, the listener, the viewer, with the opportunity to view the world from a unique perspective. One such treasure is this beautiful painting by an unnamed 25-year-old man labelled with intellectual disability. As recorded by Ellen Kellenberger in that journal article, the 25-year-old man's first communion as a boy was refused by the priest, and subsequently the offended parents broke off all contact with the church. Subsequently, he lived in an institution, a local one, for people with disability. And as part of that institution, they were all invited to contribute and be part of a local art display by parishes in the adjoining area. And it so happened that in the institution, the art teacher there had told the story of Moses and the burning bush to her adult pupils, students. And the spontaneous reaction of this 25-year-old man were in these words. "That is," and I quote, "that is a very sad tale. Now I will paint the desolate people because they must go away immediately. I will give them a long rope so that they do not lose one another." Might we identify with today's reading of Hosea, in which God leads the people with, and I encourage you to reread the text from this morning, I think it was verse 5, beautiful words, leads the people with cords of human kindness, with bands of love. Cords of human kindness, bands of love. Kellenberger's interpretation is that the artist strongly identifies with the Israelites' wanderings in the wilderness. It depicts an uncertain time in the young man's life when he was contemplating leaving his parents' home. Being of rather short stature, does he perhaps depict himself as the first of the group? The group of five men seem rather lost in their surroundings, moving in small steps, slowly and painfully. They are all holding on to the same rope. This rope connects them all. Quote, "lest they should lose one another," as the painter said. You'll notice, if you look closely, that it's green. This cord is green, the colour of hope and life in the desert. So Kellenberger surmises that the painter focuses on an overlooked aspect. This is not a triumphal walk of the liberated. but a risky flight of anxious people. The painter appears to understand the ambivalence of hope and fear. There is anxiety about future difficulties and joyful courage about an end to their wandering. Perhaps we could imagine also holding on to the same rope with those who have traditionally been excluded and recall this powerful image of connectedness. What hopes are there for alleviation of even an end to their exilic experience? As mentioned this morning, you've incorporated a number of elements from a new assembly liturgy called to be a church for all. So I'm just going to make some observations generally from both theological and sociological perspectives as they relate to the lived experience of people labelled by disability. Firstly, a comment about labels. I personally have a bee in my bonnet about them because they can so easily become the defining characteristic of a person. Accompanied by stereotypes and generalisations, interactions then become compromised with someone who is perceived as different. We might hold back, avoiding the customary greeting of hello, how are you? Perhaps we are uncertain, fearful perhaps, of extending the hand of friendship and communication. What is all that about? Secondly, a comment about inclusion. Whilst the ministry title that I wear is about disability inclusion, it does not always sit very comfortably with me. The word inclusion suggests a privileged person or group which is able to determine who is in and who is out. However, in theological terms, this is a myth, as we are all included by God's wide open arms. We are graced indeed. People identified by disability want this message to be centre stage. We are all already included. Rather, it is the actions and structural barriers that exclude people labelled by disability from belonging and participating fully. In Australia, our history over the past century has seen many of our service organisations and agencies evolve from the tireless work of parent advocacy groups, often involving people of faith, who develop support groups for their children and themselves. In taking a more recent slice of history and providing a very brief context, since 1981, the International Year of Disabled Persons, much has happened. And in your own midst here, Reverend John Howard, I've understood John, he is here, terrific John, I was hoping you might be. I just want to pay tribute to John as one of the early pioneers around the 1981 and prior to that period in the life of the Uniting Church as an advocate for this ministry that continues to this day. So since that time, we've seen the push for deinstitutionalisation, the push for disability rights over charitable or deserving poor concepts, and the increasing emphasis on autonomy and self-responsibility. This increasingly means a move to individualised funding packages in which people exercise their choice of service provider, a symbol of individual empowerment. Whilst much of this is to be applauded, the reality is that people with disabilities are still amongst the most disadvantaged in our society, with policy and legislation needed to protect people from a variety of discriminations. Two current royal commissions that are running, one in Victoria into the needs of people with health, mental health, and a federal one about to commence or has commenced, looking at violence, abuse and neglect of people with disability, are both things that this synod will have input into. So in talking broadly about society, the question is, what of the church? I'm going to suggest that for most of its recorded history, the church, in its various forms, has had difficulty in getting to grips with the fact of disability and difference. Whilst much has been done and continues to be done down the ages by welfare and community agencies, the recognition of people with a disability as people with religious and spiritual needs has by and large been sidelined. Census data indicates that approximately 20% of citizens live with direct experience of disability, be that physical, sensory, cognitive, intellectual, or psychiatric. When we look around the pews broadly in our churches, is there a similar representation of 20%, or for that matter, in other faith communities or traditions beyond Christendom? I believe not. The question is, what is that about? I suspect one of the reasons for a historically low participation rate by people with disabilities in the life of faith communities, certainly Christian ones, is because of the particular interpretation of Jesus' healing narratives, which have emphasised the permanent cure of an illness or supposed disability, be that blindness or paralysis. People have been scared away because they might be prayed over for healing inappropriately, to have their blemishes or differences somehow corrected based on a standardising or normal definition of what is whole and unblemished. I also think that people with disabilities have been perceived as other than ordinary within the human community. Some years ago, I had the privilege of working in the Synod with Elizabeth Hastings. That name may be familiar to some of you. Elizabeth lived with polio, and prior to working in the Uniting Church, was Australia's first disability discrimination commissioner. And she poignantly said, and I'll quote these words from her as a person of faith. She said, "Certainly, disability is not always convenient, attractive, nor desirable. But it is an ordinary attribute of being human, and human societies must stop unnecessarily excluding us from their ordinary activities, and now in Australia unlawfully, and that includes religious organisations. I should add," and this is Elizabeth again, "I should add at this point that even though my disability is also not especially convenient, attractive or desirable, it is my life, and I have absolutely no wish for it to be otherwise. What is needed is exactly the same as is required in any relationship: willingness, openness, and risk-taking. People often ask me, what should I say to a person who has a disability? Try hello. And do be aware that our disability is not at the forefront of our minds until someone, or something like a flight of stairs, puts it there. When I am in church, I am not praying for cure, except for my bad temper, harsh judgment, impatience, rudeness, lack of charity. All those things one does that one ought not to have done. I'm also praying for the world, for friends and family, and so on. When I meet people or am engaged in a transaction such as shopping, my disability is not at the front of my mind either. And the furtive staring, patronising comments, and intrusive questions still take me by surprise and wound me." Unquote, Elizabeth Hastings. I believe Elizabeth was saying we need a serious revision in which we appreciate people for who they are, of disability being part of an ordinary life, and with the emphasis being on people's gifts rather than their deficits. In returning to Kellenberger's image and appreciating people for who they are, with its emphasis on personal story, this begins in reaching beyond any apprehensions or fears we may have, and finding ways of listening to the other person's story. the will to embrace is the key, I believe, to our endeavours. The will to embrace the stranger, the person who is other, the exiled, is at the heart of the issue. In doing so, we also open ourselves to self-embrace. This will to embrace is at the heart of healing and reconciliation. In closing, the experience of exile is probably familiar to us all in one way or another. But for people labelled by disability, the layers affecting exile are more complex and deep-seated. That's why in our communities of faith, we can affirm God's leading of us with those cords of human kindness and bands of love. Amen. Just briefly, if I may, because I've got the lectern. Claire mentioned that I could just do a little spruiking, so I'll just take that opportunity briefly. This is the mental health kit that Claire referred to, I believe. So I've got extra copies, so please take them. And we've got boxes and boxes of them at Synod, so let me know if you need more. I'll also leave some copies of the Synod's recently launched Disability Action Plan. And that gives the whole Synod, congregations, presbyteries, a template for how we can respond. And particularly on the inside is an insert, which is an easy English version. And that's my recommendation that you read that one first. It gives you a good handle on the whole thing. Two other quick things. Part of the ministry I'm involved with is running what's called clinical pastoral education programs. So if you know of people who are interested in furthering pastoral skills, I'll leave some brochures there. It's the Uniting Churches Centre called the John Paver Centre. And this coming Sunday, for people who have been affected by road trauma, we organise at Parliament House an annual what's called Time for Remembering ceremony for people killed and seriously injured on our roads. That's next Sunday at midday in Parliament House, and I'll leave some brochures about that too. Thank you very much.